2 weeks ago today is when Nancy Guthrie went missing. Day 14 of this unbelievable, surreal search for the mother of Savannah Guthrie, the host of the Today Show. And after a night of very intense law enforcement activity and a federal search warrant operation that yielded no arrests, Sheriff Chris Nanos with the Pima County Sheriff's Department is vowing that they will not give up his message. We are going to find Nancy.
Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime. Here's your host, Emmy Award-winning journalist, Joel Waldman.
What's up, SDS Nation? Welcome to Surviving the Survivor. This is the global phenomenon, bringing you the very best guests in all of true crime. Hard to believe we're at the 2 week mark since Nancy Guthrie vanished. Where is she? Who has her? Everyone keeps saying this person is unsophisticated, but is the person responsible or people responsible? Are they really unsophisticated? Because authorities can't seem to find who they are. Nancy Guthrie was last seen the night of January 31st into the early morning hours of February 1st. Overnight last night, we saw an absolute flurry of investigative activity, federal involvement, and renewed public messaging from the sheriff. Tonight, we're going to break it all down, and we've got another panel of the best guests in true crime, which we have day in and day out. Welcoming to the show for the very first time, you've got Lieutenant Nick Alamshaw, a veteran SWAT commander. Not going to tell you which jurisdiction, but he is in Arizona, experienced in tactical deployments, warrant service, and operational decision-making under pressure, sort of like the guys who went in last night. One of the STS favorites, Dr. Laura Pettler. She's been without power. She is an internationally recognized criminologist and forensic scientist. She's an expert on world expert on staged murder. Laura, have you gotten your power back?
No, Joel, we are on day 11, and hopefully, as I spoke with Duke Power on Friday, they said we'll have it back on within the next three business days. So that's
sure they will. All right. Yeah. Well, I hope the horsies are staying warm somehow, and that they're okay. But
they're all doing well.
Yeah, North Carolina, what's going on with you? Duke Energy, what's happening? Last but not least here, a friend of Dr. Laura Pettler and now a friend of ours, Detective Cloyd Steiger, retired Seattle homicide detective. So we've got all the bases covered here. Let me just get into this right now with the latest statement. And this is being reported by Matt Finn regarding Sheriff Chris Nanos, who's taken a lot of heat. I'm going to read this now. He says that this is according to Matt Finn, again, Fox News. I used to work with them. Pima County Sheriff Nanos says to expect police activity every day, giving more details about last night's massive Guthrie police-wide activity. He tells Fox that the person detained in the traffic stop last night outside Culver's, which we believe involved the gray Range Rover, was a person of interest who was, quote unquote, cooperative and later released. As for the other two detainees, I'm guessing anyone at the residence was detained, but that is standard procedure to allow investigators serving a search warrant freedom to conduct their search. I was not at the scene, and I'm sure people were detained, but no one was arrested, and more importantly, no sign of Nancy was found. Let me stop it there because it goes on. But Cloyd, let's start with you, and you'll have to unmute yourself here. Again, a veteran homicide detective out of Seattle. This is the sheriff conducting clearly the biggest investigative search he has ever been a part of. And he says, I'm guessing anyone at the residence was detained. That's standard procedure. Why is this guy guessing about anything? And with all that activity last night, three people are detained, no arrests. What is happening?
Well, yeah, you're right. He should know what's going on, but he's an administrator and he's never had a living like this before in his life. He's not the worker bee doing all the work here. So he's kind of on the outside looking in. He should be briefed regularly so he knows what is fact and what isn't fact. But this is a big dynamic investigation. You know, it can take a lot of different turns.
Yeah. Cloyd, I don't know how many years you were a homicide detective. I guess it was more than a couple. 22 years.
As a homicide detective.
As a homicide detective. What's your gut telling you? By the way, he's a friend of Jim Fuda, who's a hostage negotiator who's been on the show out of King County. But, Cloyd, what's your gut tell you here about who this person or people might be and what a possible motive could be?
Well, you know, in your intro, I noticed you said that they didn't seem sophisticated. And that I believe that's true about the guy that was at the front door. He is not the main player in this. I mean, there's no question in my mind. He is very unsophisticated and looked like kind of a bumbling idiot to me. Mm. But he's not the one. He's not the brains behind this operation. He's just a tag along or an assistant. So it is relatively sophisticated overall. I mean, it's, you know, they haven't caught anybody yet. That doesn't mean they won't. And you know, bringing people in left and right is kind of, for a big case like this, is not necessarily unusual either.
Dr. Pettler, let me continue on here. And I believe both the doctor and Nick are going to have to bounce right at the bottom 8:30. So we'll keep it short and sweet tonight. But Dr. Pettler, let me read on here. Sheriff Nanos tells Fox News, every day moving forward, there will be a lot of police activity throughout the community. As to what level of activity, that depends on what lead they chase down and how it deploys. These leads start in the command post and move to the field as needed. That's one reason you're seeing activity build up as the day goes on that can ultimately lead to a search warrant looking for Nancy and any suspect involved. I mean, Dr. Pettler, I am a huge supporter of law enforcement, and I don't want to knock this guy too much, but what does this mean every day moving forward? There'll be a lot of police activity. I had veteran detectives on last night who said, last night, there's no way this is a nothing burger. There's no way they would deploy this amount of resources and not make an arrest and not have something come of it, and nothing came of it. What's happening here?
So, you know, when I think that it's common, and Nick and Cloyd both can speak to this better than I can, but it's common for people to serve warrants without the SWAT team. And it is common for investigators to detain somebody without that much presence of tactical deployment. So for me, when the sheriff is saying that you're going to see all kinds of activity going forward every single day, what I think that he's explaining is that they've received 30,000 tips. They're going through those. They have to go through a triage process, and then they're going, taking them at deeper levels to figure out what might be credible, what may not be credible, and sort all of those, and then follow up on the ones that they think may hold some weight. And as they're going through those leads, they're pursuing them in the field. So for me, it means that we're going to see a lot more of those tips that do turn into potential leads be followed through on. And that way we're, you know, he's trying to do his job is what I hear him trying to say.
Yeah. Mike, to you, appreciate you being here, and Nick, I keep calling you Mike. I'm sorry, Nick. Appreciate you being here and appreciate your service. And apologies for butchering your name. I knew that would happen eventually because we've been going two straight weeks. But Nick, we're looking at some of the, you know, they're pulling away this Range Rover. By the way, there are reports that the person unalived himself. That is apparently not the case. I don't know if you were watching last night, Nick, in real time, but I mean, at least two SWAT trucks deployed. And then today, again, you know, he's saying expect to see this. I've never seen this, you know, and I covered news for a long time where they're just running operations at night, kind of like what appears to be shots in the dark. I'm wondering what you made of what happened last night.
So just real quick, I just have to give a little disclaimer that anything that is expressed for me on here is not representative of any law enforcement agency. This is all based on my own experience in 18 years of being in law enforcement. But typically for a SWAT team to get involved, it has to meet a certain level before we bring out the armored vehicles and a tactical team to come and serve a warrant. And so usually you have some sort of reason on doing that. We don't just typically bring out all the equipment and the manpower for no reason. We have lower levels that we can go and serve warrants, whether it's taking a smaller squad of guys, or we can simply just go knock on the door with detectives if it doesn't meet to that level of potential violence. So whatever they had to bring out the tactical team from Pima County, they had something that led them to believe that they could have been met with some sort of resistance or some sort of history that made them believe they needed those resources.
Explain for those of us who are not on a SWAT team, and that's everybody except for you and most of the world, explain why two trucks at one location last night, and what do you guys, how do you, I mean, without giving away the secret sauce, I mean, how do you operate? Are you getting, in this case, do you think that they're getting their information from the feds, from Pima County, and just how much time do you need to prepare and go?
So it's really all dependent on the case. Based on my experience, when we've worked larger investigations, you know, the teams are typically on standby. I don't believe Pima County has a full-time SWAT or tactical component. So for them, they have to kind of spin up, get everybody ready. And then as they're getting the information, then they can start moving on whatever operation they need to. So for them, it could be an hour, it could be 2 hours to get all their resources in place. For us, in my experience, we have, you know, we're working with our case detectives. They're giving us information saying, hey, this is potentially what you guys may need to be doing here in the next hour or two. So we'd have all the resources staged and ready. As you can see on the screen there, you have a large armored vehicle, which is considered, it's called a bear. And it is not uncommon for us to bring two or three of those out to an incident simply for resources. One, they act as a transport vehicle for the tactical operators. Two, we use them as cover in case something goes sideways. And then we also use them as medical extract vehicles, whether it's for neighbors, if we need to evacuate people, or if somebody gets injured, we can use one of those as a transport vehicle to get them to where we can link up with the fire department.
Yeah. And last night we kept hearing the word staging. So Brian Enton, who's a friend of ours and the best reporter on this, along with Michael Ruiz of Fox News, in my humble opinion. So Brian kept saying, hey, these guys have deployed from the sheriff's department, that they might just be staging. When you guys are, you know, on duty working a shift, you generally leave, the headquarters and stage somewhere just in case something breaks, or do you stick around headquarters?
So it really depends on where the case is at. I've had cases where I've sat in an office for 12 hours waiting for detectives to say, hey, all right, go ahead. Or they can call and say, hey, we're going to be ready in a half hour. So we'll get the team to a staging location, which is typically a parking lot of some sort. And then we'll brief up the operation and then move to accomplish the mission.
Cloyd, let's get back to you. We'll work our way back up now. This was not a county or state warrant. This was a federal warrant. Why federal? Why not Pima County, you know, Arizona State? I don't even know if they operate on a state level, but why a federal warrant here?
Well, I would presume it's because the federal agents are the ones that developed the probable cause, and so they just went to a federal magistrate to get the warrant. I think that's just a matter of routine. It's not that big a deal. It wouldn't have any more or less power than a state warrant would. They'd have to be equal, but it depends. The federal agents can go present their affidavit to a federal magistrate, where it'd have to be a state or a local officer to go to a state court. It's probably just as simple as that.
Okay. And Dr. Pettler, I've got to come back to you because you're kind of the criminologist here. The one who's looking at some of the psychology of this. Have you given any more thought to motive here. And again, I mean, Cloyd touched on this. I'd like to touch on it with you. Basically says the guy at the door looks like a bumbling idiot, but it appears that 2 weeks in, no one knows who these guys are or why they did this or where they're hiding. Any thought about motive?
I guess it's fair to say I'm a pretty high-stress guy because I worry about absolutely everything, including this very ad that I'm reading right now, and whether or not you're going to believe me and go out and buy this amazing product. But there's a company that ships federally legal THC right to your doorstep, and man, they are discreet. And yes, I'm talking about Mood.com. And among their gummies, two of them are my favorite. Sleepy Time Advanced Gummies does exactly that. When you're up and you're tossing and turning at night, you take a Sleepy Time gummy, boom, you are out cold. And then next, COE, Carm, sorry, but it's true. Sexual Euphoria Advanced Gummies, they help in the bedroom. They help a lot. But if you're not into gummies, there are other options. You've got flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and yes, even beverages. And despite what you've heard in the news, THC products such as Moods are still federally legal to buy online. And best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but listeners get 20% off their first order with code STS.
You know, I don't know about motive, but I think that the scene is reflective of the personality of the offender. And I think that the victim is also reflective of something that we may not be able to see quite yet. And the man on the porch is one piece of the puzzle. But to me, even though he appears to be very calm, he doesn't appear nervous, he doesn't appear to be panicked, he also doesn't appear to be 100% sophisticated. And sophistication and organization are two spectrums that when we're looking at offender behavior, and we're watching him here on the screen now, when we're analyzing the behavior of people like this, for me, I don't box myself into they're organized or disorganized. They're sophisticated or unsophisticated. That's very black and white thinking, and black and white thinking can really get you in trouble in these kind of circumstances, because you have to keep all of your options open. And so in this case, I think that there's some level of sophistication in that he carrying equipment. He appears to be somewhat prepared, but maybe not completely prepared. He has a mask on, he has gloves on. And so there's some level of preparation. There's some level of thinking that went on prior. So there's a bit of sophistication, but to me, he appears to be more like a mule, you know, where there may be a person that's in charge of more the logistics. And then there may be a person that is like a mastermind. And I was just thinking about this earlier, but I would be processing for blood going all the way out this area from the front porch all the way through the gravel here, because no matter how much, you know, it rains or snows or whatever on blood, you're going to be able to see blood with reagents and alternative light sources. And I would be interested to know if this individual walked up to the house. Did he hike to the house? Or is there actually a vehicle somewhere in the vicinity out there that you can't see outside this area that we can see with the camera? And does this trail of if there is a trail of blood that comes off the porch and goes into the gravel, is this person, is it, does it lead to where they may have put Nancy in a car? And motive, I'm concerned that there's a 41-minute gap between this time that this guy is on the porch and what the sheriff said in his press conference. And this has been a while ago, but it was the press conference where he gave the timeline from the cameras. And, you know, 41 minutes is a very, very long time to be in that house. And That is definitely concerning to me regarding.
What's your guess on that? What's your guess on that? Because that's, if it's 41 minutes is exceptionally long.
Yes, it is. And, you know, if there's a motive of robbery, you know, you can potentially get through everything and take what you're going to be able to actually carry. If you're this guy actually carrying things out relatively quickly, you know, you're not carrying big pieces of art out of the house. You know, you're going to be taking things that maybe can fit in the backpack. Sometimes, you know, I've seen them wear trench coats and they sew pockets all into these trench coats, and then they can put everything, like line themselves with materials that they steal from the house. But that doesn't appear to be the motive. So the wallet's not missing. Her phone isn't gone with her. So like her personal belongings were there. They would have most likely taken something like that. The back door is allegedly reported wide open. So it's like, was this guy's whole purpose just to get in the house? And then there's some other motive that's illustrious of time. And I think that time in the house is significant. And I don't think we have enough information yet to overreach or to go further there. I think it's important to remain ultra conservative on that point.
Yeah. Thank you. Cloyd, let me just go back to you and then back to Nick. But Cloyd, just on this 41 minutes point that there, whoever was in the house, this is potentially an abduction and a kidnapping. I would think you want to get in, get out. Do you have a theory about 41 minutes and or a theory about motive here?
Well, you know, 41 minutes is a really long time. It tells me that the person was comfortable enough to remain in there, or else got in there and was indecisive about what they were going to do. And we're trying back and forth, and it is a long, long, long time. And you get an 84-year-old woman, it's not, even if the motive is just to abduct her, it's not going to take you 41 minutes. So I don't know. Was stuff moved around inside? You got to know what the inside of the house looked like. Did they try to take her medications with them, which would be a good sign? But they felt comfortable in the house. They just didn't feel threatened that somebody's going to come by and catch them.
Now, Cloyd, something that I keep getting asked and I haven't asked yet, so I will ask you. She was obviously on quite a bit of medication. As part of your investigation, if this is you, would you have counted, you know, every pill is accounted for through a pharmacy. Would you have counted her because her medications were apparently left behind. But would you have counted the vials, the pills in the vials, to see if there was, let's say, 2 weeks worth of pills taken to account for time that they thought they might be holding her?
Yes, I definitely would do that. I'd go through all the medication, look at them, and if the numbers all add up to what she should have taken to that point and the rest are there, that's not a good sign. And so, but that's something you need to do.
Yeah. Nick, apologies again for calling you Mike, but four letters, I'm close enough, I guess. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. Hope you're having a good one. Couple questions for you. Number one, HRT is apparently on the ground. That is the FBI's elite unit, hostage rescue team. Do you guys work in concert with them? I know that they're, you know, like they are the big guns that train all the time. They probably, since I know a couple, have some ego. But do you guys play nice with each other? And how do you interact if they're on the ground there?
So yeah, I mean we interact with agencies from all over. You know, where I work, we have really great relationships with all the agencies that surround us. As far as the FBI goes, you know, they are a team that we do run across here and there. We've done training with them. With FBI HRT, since they're not based in Arizona, they're not a team that we see a ton. They come out and do some training and, you know, we'll interact with them, you know, see what the latest tactics are that they're using and see how that stuff kind of applies to us. Now, as far as something like this, where if they're in town, you know, it's going to be very much one of those where they're serving the search warrants or we're serving the search warrants. There's not going to be a lot of intermixing of teams just because of the dynamics. We all do things a little bit differently. And so with them, I'm assuming that they're in town down in Tucson for the sole fact of if they locate Nancy, then they'll be able to go and do a hostage rescue on her. as opposed to having the local team do it.
Yeah. And Nick, one more question for you. Let me just, by the way, Nick, I know you have to bounce at 8:30. Laura, did you say you also had to be out at 8:30?
I'm at 8.
Oh, at 8. Oh, boy. Okay, so I have 5 minutes. And then, Cloyd, would you be able to stick around from, let's say, 8:30 to quarter of, which is 5:30 your time, to take some questions?
Sure.
Okay, so we'll at the very end, you've got a homicide detective with 22 years just in homicide on the panel, and I'll let you guys throw as many questions as we can get in 15 minutes. So let me get to you, Dr. Pettler, because you only have 5 minutes left here. Are you 100% convinced at this point that this is a targeted attack, which has been the theory, that this was not, you know, happenstance, you know, someone just stumbling across the home? Is it targeted, in your opinion?
Yes. And based on what we know at this point, for me, the information is consistent with Nancy being a specific person that was targeted. But I don't know beyond that, because again, what's going on in their investigation and what we know on the outside are two very different things. But looking at her victimology, just what we know about Nancy so far, one of the ideas that, you know, has kind of gone through my head is a person that's cutting all the grass in that whole area, and they're looking for an easy target for some reason. You know, would Nancy have been an easy target? One of the things is, one of the reasons she could be an easy target is because she is a low risk victim. But she's also a high risk, high maintenance victim, where her health and her mobility and aspects of her condition may be more challenging to manage for potential abductors. It's like, if you target her, are you targeting her because you want $6 million and you know that her daughter has enough money to pay you that amount of money? Or is there some other reason or some other target? Is it really about money? If it was really about money, I think it might have shown itself a little differently here, and there might have been a lot more action up front. And it could have been potentially resolved by this point. That, you know, for it to go on for 2 weeks seems long to me personally. But like I said, you know, we don't know. We just don't know what they know and what's really going on here. And so I, you know me, Joel, I don't like to speculate on things, because I think that it's just, you know, unsubstantiated opinion. But in general, the victimology is consistent at this point with it being a targeted attack on Nancy Guthrie. Yes.
Yeah. And Dr. Pettler, I mean, the COE is playing stuff here. She herself said to me before I left for the studio tonight, she said, I can't believe actually how much mention there is of Nancy Guthrie on the Today Show. I mean, this is a show that if you don't have cable, you're getting it on basic TV, which almost no one, you know, the whole world has that. Most people do have cable now. But the point is, it's a massive platform, and she's showcasing her mom a lot. In hindsight, and I don't want to criticize Savannah Guthrie, I'm just wondering your thoughts. I mean, it's probably not a great idea. This is coming from a guy that hosts a show with his 86-year-old mother. But how careful, in hindsight, you know, should Savannah Guthrie have protected her mom a little bit more?
You know, I don't have an opinion on that at this point, Joel, because like you, I do a lot of things with my 89-year-old uncle. So, you know, I completely involve my uncle in lots of aspects of my life. And the fact that he's 89 is just, to me, a benefit. It's not, I always say I don't have to take care of my uncle. I get to take care of my uncle. It's my honor to take care of my uncle. And so I'm a person that advocates for elderly people and elder care, and, you know, taking care of people and including them and being there for the elderly population in our country. So I'm probably not a good person to ask that, to be honest with you, because I include my uncle in everything too. Joel, you're muted.
Yeah, every once in a while it does that. Thank you. When investigators are conducting a large-scale operation like they did last night, and now the sheriff says expect these often, does that tell you anything about where this investigation is at?
Who was that for?
Dr. Pettler, that's for you.
Question. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you, Joel.
Yeah, I'm saying when there are these large scale operations and then you've got the sheriff saying, hey, yeah, we're going to be doing these for the foreseeable future. It sounds like they're throwing spaghetti at the wall. What's your interpretation of what we saw last night without an arrest and him saying that there's going to be more of these large scale operations? Does that concern you, or is this something that you see in your own experience that they're just working leads?
I've seen this in my own experience, and in this is my 25th year in homicide, and many investigations I've been involved in, and even in our own now in the private sector, when we're actively working a case, we are definitely wanting information to come in, and we're out there chasing it down. And one of the things that is common to see in a case file in homicide investigation is like a lead sheet or some type of a document that provides information about all the leads that came into detectives or that came into other investigators during the course of an investigation. And we use that lead sheet as kind of a checklist to make sure that all those I's are dotted and T's are crossed and that we're out there following up on those. And the agency that has like a big CID, or maybe they're being assisted by the state level agency or something like that, to say, okay, you guys go and investigate this, and you guys go and follow up on this, and you guys go to the Walmart and talk to them and ask them for footage. So all these different leads are going to be assigned to people based on my information and or my experience, and everybody's going to be out in the field. And so I think what the sheriff is saying, like, okay, nobody, you know, go overreacting here. You're going to see a tremendous amount of work being done in the field because we are going to be actively out here chasing down every lead that we think is a viable, feasible, reasonable thing to pursue. I'm sure that out of 30,000, they're getting a lot of things that they can triage through and maybe put in a non-critical evidence type pile. And then the other ones, they're sorting, and maybe they have lots of piles, you know, that they're sorting into different categories. But I think it's their responsibility to make sure that they are following up and triaging to be able to do that first level sort and following up on the ones that they think could turn into something that would be viable.
Dr. Pettler, I love your insight and love having you on the show. And I hope you get power back. And I hope you get to enjoy Valentine's Day and give those horses a scratch under their chin.
I will. Thank you so much for having me, Joel. And we will see all of you guys later.
All right. Have a great night. Cloyd, to you, someone in the chat here just mentioned this. You're looking timestamps on video. My dash cam, car clock, iPhone, stove clock, light timer, bed alarm clock, all have different times, with differences up to over 60 minutes. I guess the big question here is just timestamps on the various electronics in the home. Is this something that you're always looking at when you're putting together an investigation to see how things match up or don't?
Well, you can test that if you have the item by seeing what it says right now and what you show as the time right now. You find that more with surveillance cameras, that the time is off, but your cell phone is hooked to the, you know, the cell system, which keeps the clock. Same with the Ring cameras hooked to the Wi-Fi, which keeps the clock right. The times are probably pretty reliable on the things they're talking about, not the, you know, if you see a surveillance video on a building out on the street, those often have the wrong time. That's why whenever you recover them, you look and see what it says right now and compare it to what you show as the time right now and then make the adjustment.
And Cloyd, I mean, you have a wealth of experience, talking 22 years just in homicide. How many years on the force?
36 years.
Yeah. How weird, how odd is this case compared to what you've seen?
Well, it's weird. I actually worked one very similar to this in the early 90s, where an elderly, relatively wealthy woman was kidnapped from her home. and held for ransom. But
and tell us about that.
In my whole career that was anything like this.
Tell us about that case. How long did that last? Did the woman survive?
That case lasted about a week, and no, she was dead on the first day. Her body was recovered.
If someone wants to research that, because people are interested in this, what was the woman's name? How do they Google that?
Mamie Louie, and I don't remember how to spell Louie. Her husband, his name was Yen Louie. He had portrait studios all around the Washington area. And so what? I think it's like L-I-U-I, I think. But Mamie was her first name, and it was in the 93, 94, something like that.
It was a motive there financial? Was it?
They asked for cash. It ended up being a bunch of Asian gangbangers that took her middle of the afternoon right out of her driveway at her home.
Wow. Rest in peace, Mamie Louie. Right. Nick, to you, let me bring this comment up here. This is just a reality of where we're at geographically. And I worked in Tucson. I met my wife there. I won my Emmy there, not to tout myself here, but I did win an Emmy for doing coverage of the Pinal County Sheriff catching drug runners in the middle of the night. And I think I won the Emmy because at the very end of the story, the dog that was searching for narcotics was so proud of himself. He took a big circle around this massive pile of drugs and peed on it to mark his spot. And that's how I ended the story. So I think that's probably why I got the Emmy for it. But Mike here says, reeks of cartels. Mules are back in Mexico. There's talk of that holster that some say is cartel style. I mean, you're in Arizona. Is this a real concern? I mean, it sounds like something out of a movie, but it's a reality in Arizona, and I've seen it firsthand.
So, yeah, I mean, there's cartel activity that is going on all over the state, especially with us being so close to Mexico. From my experience, though, typically a cartel is not going to do something that's going to be very high profile. Their goal is to stay under the radar because they don't want the prolific media coverage. They don't want law enforcement messing with them. They do stuff to, you know, make their money. They sell drugs. They're, you know, running people, doing those types of things where it's not going to bring the attention to them. They don't want the attention from American law enforcement if they can avoid it. So from my experience up here, it's very limited on when cartels are actually taking on big types of incidents or causing problems that's going to bring a lot of attention to themselves.
Yeah, COE, I don't know if you can pull it up. There's photos of this holster what's interesting, what's interesting, Cloyd, about the holster, it's available. It's like some weird material holster that's available at Walmart. And people who have been researching this, cyber sleuths, believe that the backpack, the jacket, all these things are Walmart items. How closely now, if you're investigating, do you have to go to Walmart and look at this and create sort of a, lack of a better term, a clothing/holster profile for this potential abductor and see if you can track down some receipts from a Walmart in Tucson?
I'm sure they're all over that. They probably have teams of detectives that's their whole job is going to Walmart. I mean, I don't mean one or two teams. I mean like 10 or 20 teams because there are a lot of Walmarts in Arizona. I have two sons who live in Arizona, so I'm there all the time. But yeah, I'm sure they have people all over it. You know, all you got to do is see all the backpack sales. They can tell that from the register. If you have any of these things in the same sale, in the business, we call that a clue. But they don't have to be all from the same sale. They can be separate. And you hope that they're recent enough that the surveillance video still exists because a lot of these places, they rotate their surveillance video. They keep it for 3 weeks, a month, and then just record over it. So hopefully it still exists. And of course, if the guy used a credit or debit card, he's a complete idiot, which they didn't do. If he was planning on this in advance, because you can go right to that and track these people down. And maybe that's some of these people, they're going to their houses because they found they purchased these things at Walmart. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, Nick, this is what people believe to be the holster. You are the gun guy, being the SWAT dude here. Does this look like, have you ever seen, it's called a strategy hip holster, I guess.
So I've never seen that particular holster myself, but I'm familiar with the types and the styles. And, you know, I could tell you that anybody who's any sort of gun connoisseur or considers themselves a gun person, gun guy, that's not the holster they're going to go buy. That is something that is very, I would consider that a very amateur holster. You know, you're looking for something, it says holster on it. You can put your gun in it. It loops through your belt, but in the big scheme of things, it's a piece of garbage type holster. Yeah. And that would be something that somebody that doesn't know much about firearms is going to purchase.
Mm. Appreciate that. And I appreciate you, Judy Herbert, incredibly generous. She is a retiree. I think I'm allowed to say that. And she supports the show, and we really appreciate it more than you know. Again, STS Singles is in the house. I have a feeling people want Nick on the STS calendar. We've got a running joke about the calendar. And thank you to Allison H. And friends of the show in Tennessee. COE, can we also, for when Cloyd is here alone, I'd like to play that clip from Dr. G. I know I'm throwing stuff at you, and the other night I got yelled at for not saying please, thank you, and thank you to my wife. For those who are new to the show, we do a panel show like this every night of the week. Generally not weekends, but Monday through Thursday, we cover the biggest true crime cases in the country. Friday, my co-host is my 86-year-old mother. She is the oldest true crime podcaster in America. If you're wondering why it's called Surviving the Survivor, my mother is a child Holocaust survivor, and she's a tough woman, and she likes to tell me what to do. So I'm always surviving the survivor. And I came up with that name, and it goes with true crime. She's also a licensed therapist for many years. So that is the show. Please hit that like button, and please subscribe. Nick, back to you, because your time is shorter than Cloyd's for this evening. Again, Sheriff Chris Nano said expect detainments. It sounded like he was warning us it could happen again tonight. You think that we'll see more of this tonight? I just can't seem to get over it. It seems a little odd. Like you're just going, it appears like they're just going out on any sort of intelligence. It could be the smallest thing to bust things up and detain people without arrest. But two parts, do you think we see them tonight? And again, is it odd the way they're doing this?
So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if you see more as these cases kind of go on with more and more time. It gives the investigators more time to start putting pieces together. And so as these things are falling together, they're going to be asking for more potential detentions, people that need to be interviewed, more search warrants, physical evidence orders. So yeah, as time goes on, I could see this being a regular occurrence if they're not getting to what they need. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the tactics and strategy that was used last night, it's not uncommon for a tactical team, for police to go and serve a search warrant, detain people, even bring them into the station and then release them. It's all part of the investigative process where, you know, it could be for an interview. They could have a search warrant for a person where they're looking for physical evidence. They need photographs, other types of physical DNA that, you know, within that search warrant, they're allowed to take. They take that DNA or that the evidence that they have probable cause for, and then now that's going to be sent to a crime lab to be processed. And they might not have enough at that point to keep that person in custody, so they have to release them until, you know, they start getting the results that they're looking for.
Yeah, Cloyd, to you, well, this person's saying an Italian in Laguna Beach. That's how you know he's not a pro. What dude would ever carry a pistol by his pistol out of fear alone? Nobody. I don't know if that's what the deal is here, but I bet you Nick's carrying a pistol a lot of times when you don't think he's carrying a pistol. I like to ask. Nick, what would happen if someone barges into your home at 3 a.m. tonight? It's not going to end well for that person.
They would probably not be too happy with the results of that.
I just like to ask SWAT guys. It's my own little sick pleasure. Cloyd, one of the things that they are not revealing to the public at all is if forcible entry was made here or if the person got in. But for investigators, that's got to be absolutely critical. Is that something that you're curious about? And is that something that you would ever release to the public?
Yeah, you know, they've already released way too much stuff, in my opinion. You know, I wouldn't release half the stuff they're saying. You need to keep it close to the vest so that when someone comes to you with information about this case, you can tell if they know about it because they really know about it or if they heard it on the news, you know. That's why you keep that stuff close to the vest. And also, you don't want the suspects to know how close or how far away you are. Because if they know that you're way off, they'll get comfortable. But if they think you're close, they might make a mistake. And so, you know, like you're talking with Laura a little earlier about the number of tips. And I've worked high-profile cases where thousands and thousands of tips come in. And generally speaking, if you have 1,000 tips, maybe one of them has anything to do with the case. Everybody else, you know, is trying to do the right thing and, you know, not maliciously calling in, but you do have to triage them down and find that one. I remember a really high profile case I worked years ago where I was, they had teams that would go through I was the lead detective, so I didn't supposedly look at the tips, but every morning when I came in, I'd kind of go through the tips real quickly. And I saw a tip. It was interesting, but I didn't think much of it. And then by the time the case was resolved, I realized that tip was right about the guy. Because it was exactly right. It didn't have a name or anything, but it had a description of the vehicle and the guy, and they said they saw him, and they just thought he looked suspicious. They didn't see the crime. And those are the type of things you look at, and sometimes, you know, you can't see the wheat for the chaff or the forest for the trees. You got to separate those, and that's laborious alone. And we had to have 50 detectives just following up on tips, and that, you know, or dividing them. When they got to the real hot ones that looked like you'd really be good, then they'd make it to me and the primary core detectives, but all the rest were just shaken down by other people. And that's the problem with these cases. It's good and it's bad. It's good because you get a lot of information. It's bad though, because you can't see which information is valuable.
Yeah, by the way, it is Jared Ross in the chat. Today is the 8 years that the Parkland shooting happened. So please keep those young students whose lives were lost in your thoughts today. Hard to believe it happened on Valentine's Day 8 years ago. So, but here's a question for Nick. Nick, this is interesting. Are people out there, you guys are driving around in these big trucks, and this is very high profile. Our own friend Brian Etten, a great reporter who's got tons of integrity, but he was sort of caught in the perimeter last night. But for those who have ill intentions, do you worry that people are sitting there calling potential arrestees or detainees saying, hey, there's a giant SWAT truck headed your way. Get out of there. How do you deal with that?
So, I mean, that is a real thing that we have to deal with nowadays. We have people that will drive by, see us staged in different parking lots. They see the armored vehicles and they start following them to see where we're going, where we're going to go stage. That way they can potentially come and, you know, give law enforcement a hard time. They can protest, that type of thing. You know, the best way that we try to avoid that is by picking locations that, you know, we're not necessarily visible to people driving by, or we pick a location that is going to be more secure, you know, that it's something that's not going to be visible to anybody. So, you know, we may have to drive longer from a police station to our actual operation location, but that maintains the security of the actual operation itself instead of the potential for a compromise.
Yeah. And Nick, again, without giving away, you know, secrets, which I know you're not going to do, but in order for SWAT to be called in to, you know, to breach the door and with stun grenades, what, give us examples of the type of actionable intelligence. In other words, would you have to know, would Pima County tell you, well, these guys, you know, could possibly have automatic weapons in the home? Does it have to be something where there could be a violent exchange going on for you to go?
So it really depends on the case. And it can be, Yes, they have, they're known to be armed. They're known to have violent criminal history. They've had other encounters with law enforcement. It could be just solely based on the crime itself. Other aspects that come into play are geography of where the search warrant's taking place. You know, is it a large type structure? You know, in this case, is it in the middle of the desert? Other things that we consider are how, if we have to go to some sort of breach, how is that house fortified? If it's a standard door and it's something that's going to be very simple to get into, then, you know, they may not need a tactical team's assistance. But if it's a case where they look at the doors and the entrances to the residence and they have security screen doors, barred up windows, things that could cause some challenges for your standard detective or patrol officer, then they may call a tactical team in because of the breaching component of it.
This stuff is fascinating to me, and I love having people, SWAT members, homicide detectives who are working on this in real time as this case is developing. Kay is for Christina here. I'm going to get to this in a second. Let me just fill in some of the gaps from last night, because if you were with us last night, it was incredibly frenetic. At one point, there was a reported self unalive, and we don't use the S word on YouTube because they get mad at us, but there was no self unaliving in that Range Rover. There was no shooting connected to the operations last night. I got real nervous because at one point late last night, after we were off air, like 2:33 in the morning, the Range Rover, they covered up the back hatch. And there were reports that maybe there was somebody or somebody inside that hatch. That is not true. There was no sign, Cloyd, of Nancy at the home that was searched. The person who was stopped in the Range Rover was actually, they cooperated and according to law enforcement were eventually released. So we've got all that information. And then you've got a question here from K is for Christina. No one's talking about how, I didn't even know this till right now, Nancy's birthday was January 27th. This happens January 31st into the first. What if Savannah sent expensive flowers and someone clocked in and thought Nancy's worth money? I mean, Cloyd, you've got to look at every possibility. I have Detective Phil Ramos, retired Las Vegas homicide. He thinks that maybe it was just home invasion or burglary gone bad where, you know, they saw a woman, they thought she had money. They go to the door and she fights and it goes south or sideways.
I mean, it could have been, I guarantee you, and Laura can attach to this about whether it's targeted or not. I think it was targeted. I guarantee you that everybody that lived around Nancy knew who she was and knew she was Savannah Guthrie's daughter. And that's why she was targeted. It's not necessarily because she was on TV a lot, but they just knew. No, that's the mother. They knew that there would be money. So, I mean, I'm not saying that's a financial motive, but I mean, I'm not surprised by that. The thing about, you know, I don't know about the robbery gone bad, because usually what happens when somebody breaks in and finds somebody there is they run. They don't stop and turn, you know, Class C felony into something you could potentially get the death penalty for. You know, it's just like if they have a brain anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know about that. I mean, not that I'm not discounting it as a possibility, but I think this was a targeted attack and the person knew who Nancy Guthrie was. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. I'd like to get both your takes on this. Nick, I know you're more from like a tactical perspective, but you know, there are these demand letters that keep coming into Harvey Levin of TMZ requesting a Bitcoin in exchange for information. Does this sound to you like just a whack job who's peripheral to all this, looking for attention? That's first part of the question. The second part of the question is, why can't they track this person down and get him out of the picture?
You know, I'm not exactly sure how those notes are making it over to Harvey Levin.
Yeah.
Obviously, if it's a digital process, then there's ways of tracking people down digitally, but with how sophisticated electronics have become, it makes it a challenge because there are bypasses for everything. You know, whether you're using different types of VPNs and whatnot, it poses some challenges for law enforcement. And then, you know, just the cooperation from certain companies isn't always there when you're trying to get serve subpoenas and search warrants for that information. Now, as far as this being, you know, just somebody who's trying to pose some sort of stunt, I think it's very likely that, you know, it could be somebody that just saw this going on. And now that this is their way of, you know, making people question different things, bring up different theories. You know, if my opinion would be if somebody had really wanted this Bitcoin or they were asking for the money, there'd be a little bit more communication that would be going on where there would be ways to coordinate this type of stuff. The information that I've been told is that some of these letters are coming in making these requests and there's no way to correspond back. So if you want the Bitcoin, if you want the money, how are you supposed to give the ransom if there's no way to coordinate that with you?
Yeah. It's that part of it is really surreal. And there's a meme going around with Harvey dressed up in the sheriff's uniform, which is part of the circus atmosphere of this whole thing. Cloyd, to you, and then I'll get back to Nick for a final thought before he has to run. If you guys have the last 15 minutes, you've got a veteran homicide detective here, 22 years with Seattle and 34 years in the force. Put in capital C's for Cloyd, three capital C's, and we'll start bringing up questions as soon as Nick bounces. But Cloyd, to you, someone just mentioned, I think, Nick can stay till 8:45. Oh, cool. All right. So someone just mentioned they think it might be some sort of revenge ploy here. Are you buying that?
Yeah, revenge for what, though? I mean, do you have to have an underlying, if there is some underlying event that someone would want revenge for, then you got to consider it, but just revenge for whatever. I mean, it's as good as any other theory, but it doesn't mean anything. And, you know, a little bit about you're right about the demands over email and stuff, and they're using VPNs. What you need to get there is you need to get your people to do child internet crimes against children cases who track down kiddie porn stuff, because they can weed right through all that stuff to the source. And so they have experience, and they'll do, and I'm sure they're probably doing that. But you're going to pull out whack jobs and all these. You can't assume everybody's a whack job that's sending you stuff. But it's kind of the first one, it sounds like, you know, that they made an arrest on, I think, early on, was a whack job trying to thinking he can get money out of this and he's an idiot. But, you know, you got to look at these seriously and try to track down the source of the emails in case one of them's right.
Yeah. Nick, to you, I mean, the obvious sort of outlier here, this is someone, an 84-year-old woman who's taken hostage and or kidnapped, if we're to believe that it is a real kidnapping. In your experience on SWAT or otherwise, have you ever dealt, you heard Cloyd say all the way back in 93 had a somewhat similar case, but have you ever had a breach a home to try to get an elderly person out being held against their will?
No, in the last 18 and a half years, we have not had anything similar to that. We've had some kidnappings and things where we've had to do some rescues, but nothing dealing with an elderly person or somebody that didn't have some ties to some underlying criminal activity somewhere.
Nick, to you, just going back to last night. We really don't know the circumstances of how this all went down. But in general, is there I don't want to give away trade secrets, but is there a standard operating procedure that you guys use? In other words, every time you go into a home, are you using like these flashbang grenades? Do you use them every time? Do you have to break the door down every time? Are there certain things you do each and every time?
No, absolutely not. Things vary based off the circumstances that are presented to us. We have different tactics on how we do our entries. You know, I was watching your show from last night and some of the guests were using the word dynamic entry a lot. Mm-hmm. And dynamic entries are really not something that is a standard protocol for SWAT teams unless you are making a hostage rescue and you have a victim that's in danger. Things have changed over the years, and we typically handle things much slower. As far as the use of what we call flash sound diversionary devices, those are not used on every search warrant. They're not used on every operation. They are used in very specific circumstances for specific reasons. And so it's not just, you know, you run up, bust the door down, throw in a FSDD, and then you run in the house. It could be surrounding the house and making announcements, asking for the patrons to come outside. It could be going up, knocking on the door and asking them to open the door for us. So depending on what we have, it depends on how we serve the warrant or deal with the operation in front of us. So it does vary, but just so everybody's kind of on the same page, it's not like it is on TV where you've got flashbangs going off everywhere and things are just very chaotic.
Yeah, yeah. Let me ask you, what is sort of the common denominator for someone to be on SWAT, where whether it's a man or a woman? Is it that you've got to be cool under pressure? How do you define what it takes to be a member of SWAT?
So, you know, we've had women on our SWAT team before. The biggest thing for me as a SWAT commander that I look for is professionals. I want professional police officers who know how to make decisions, can be calm in chaotic situations, and can communicate. You know, when it comes to tactics and shooting and that type of stuff, a lot of that we can teach officers as long as they have the aptitude. But when it comes to decision making and professionalism, that's not something that you can always teach. And I really look for that in the people that join our team.
And when all hell is breaking loose, how do you train, or how do you, I bring it up because my oldest is a scaredy cat and I tell her to train her brain. It's a slogan I use in the house, but how do you train yourself to stay relatively calm, which I think you have to do under really, really stressful situations? What goes into that?
Typically it's a lot of training. So, you know, we do a lot of reality-based training where it's the SWAT team doing different scenarios where you have real life actors that are involved. They're having to make decisions based off what's going on in those training scenarios. And it's not just, you know, going onto a range and shooting a paper target that doesn't communicate with you. So we try to make the training as live, real life as possible. The other thing that I think is extremely important and, something that we train quite a bit on is just doing simple decision-making exercises where, you know, you could have a conversation with somebody, pose them a particular scenario, and they can talk through it. So you're building a mental Rolodex of scenarios inside your head that may not necessarily all be the same, but you can pull pieces of that to apply to situations you run into.
I might have to send my 11-year-old daughter to train with you guys. I hope you don't mind. Cloyd, and by the way, Gigi says Nick has the SWAT face. That is a compliment. There you go, on Valentine's Day. Cloyd, one question everyone's wondering is, you see this guy going in, this perp going in, but you never see any images of Nancy coming out. I mean, I don't know that we know for sure whether they have them or don't have them. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think they exist where Nancy's coming out of the house and they can see what's going on? Because there was obviously some blood on that front porch.
I don't think so, because they took the camera or disabled the camera either right after going in or just before they went in. So that's why they probably don't have any footage of that, you know. And why she was bleeding, they obviously had to take her violently. I mean, it could be as much as just giving her a bloody nose, or she could have been seriously hurt. I don't know. But yeah, the camera, my understanding was the camera was disabled and removed. So that probably happened between the time you get the video of the bumbling idiot on the porch and them removing Nancy from the scene.
Here's another one for you from Ella B. And man, it is a quiet night compared to last night, everybody. So I guess take that and appreciate it, because who knows, maybe tomorrow night it gets wild again or later tonight. But from LB here, back to Cloyd, is there a real chance that this case could turn cold. Let me caveat by saying everyone was diving on the Moscow PD during the Brian Koberger case. They don't know who he is. They're bumbling idiots, small town police. And they knew exactly who he was. And 7 weeks later, they collared that guy. We're still relatively very early on. But do you have fears of a potential of this turning potentially cold, Cloyd?
No, not at all. Because first of all, things are a lot different today than they were 10, 15 years ago when you had cold cases like that, because there's advancements in forensics and stuff. And this is such a dynamic case with such national attention, there's no chance that they're going to just stop working it and have it go cold. When they're doing these search warrants, there's no doubt in my mind that they are swabbing the cheeks of everybody they meet to get baseline DNA on them and compare them to any unknown DNA they might have at the house. So that'll all happen. If they have, first of all, if they have DNA at the house, and the DNA is not Nancy's and not anybody that knows them, if that's true, then this case will definitely be solved. It's just a matter of finding the right cheek to swab, or working your way through genealogy and that type of thing. I don't know that that's true. I don't know that that DNA they have, if they have DNA, is from the suspect and not some other, you know, innocent reason it's there. But if it is the suspect, this case is done. But it's just going to take a matter of matching up with the person.
Yeah. And Nick, back to you. I mean, you guys are specialists, right? You come in and you do your thing. How often do you go in and get the bad guys and then find out that they might not be the bad guys? They're just being detained. Yeah, I'll take that in a minute, COE. But how often do you go in and then just leave and the guys walk away and they're just, you know, shaking their shoulders going, I can't believe these SWAT guys just barged in here for no reason. It seems like you guys go in for very specific reasons.
Yeah, you're right. We typically don't just go in and serve a warrant and leave, I guess you could say, empty-handed. Typically, if we're going in to serve this warrant, investigators have developed enough probable cause. They have physical evidence orders that need to be served. Something brought us to that point. And so, you know, that is not something that happens very often. I very rarely see that.
Yeah. COE, let's let her rip. I don't know what you have. There's an interview here. Let's watch it and get these guys take.
Mom's 80th birthday, and I'm hoping this gives her a boost. My mom, Nancy Guthrie, was born this day. Nancy Ellen Long, 1942 in Fort Wright, Kentucky, carrying that family trait of round cheeks and curly hair and blue eyes that continues to this day. She's lived a life of integrity and loyalty. Mm. She is a consistent doer of the right thing and the hard thing. She's a truth teller, whether you really want to hear the truth or not. She's quick and she's smart. She's well-read. She's curious about everything. She's daring and adventurous. She's willing to jet off anywhere. And I really do mean jet. She once got in an F-16 and for a ride. She has met unthinkable challenges in her life with grit, without self-pity, with determination, and always, always with unshakable faith. She loves us, her family, fiercely, and her selflessness and sacrifice for us, her steadfastness and her unmovable confidence is the reason any of us grew up to do anything. She's going to be embarrassed by this, but I hope a little pleased, because when I think of her, I think of that old proverb, the one she taught me about the woman of noble character. It says, her children will rise up and call her blessed. Mm. And so we do. Happy birthday, Mom.
Happy
birthday. She's turning 80. You got to get something.
That was beautiful. And you told me recently that the reason that you were confident that you were going to have Vail was because your mother told you it was going to happen.
Yeah, she did. I believe her. My mom, she's a truth teller, so she doesn't BS, if I guess I can say that. Sorry, Mom. And she, when I was in my 30s and wasn't sure I would ever have kids, she said, of course you will, honey.
Nancy,
of course you will have your family.
Wow.
Nancy's beautiful. Also a woman of great faith.
She is.
And the conversations I've had with her, she always talks about that.
She is. She's an inspiration.
Beautiful.
Happy
beautiful.
80th, Nancy.
Yeah, happy 80th, yes. Mama.
Yeah, and welcome to network news I used to work in, where there's reports that people are already vying for her anchor chair. She doesn't come back. The most cutthroat, this horrible business on planet Earth. But that's another story. But Nick, to you there, a beautiful tribute. And again, I'm not one to talk about this. I mean, I'm nothing. I'm a nothing burger compared to a mega nothing burger compared to like the likes of the Today Show. But my mom hosts with me. I talk about her. And by the way, my mother is, if Nancy's a truth teller, I don't know what my mom is, because she tells me to go F myself. So I don't know how you define that. But it's also an advertisement for who her mother is to a national massive audience. And you know this, Nick, there are a lot of deranged people out there, a lot of people who don't like the media now. The world is fractured. Do you think there's a chance it could just be someone who's completely unhinged, who happened to be watching the Today Show and said, let me go, I don't like these people, I don't like this network, I don't like NBC, and this is a woman I can get to?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't think that's out of the realm of possibilities when you're in the public eye or the, you know, on TV all the time, and you're not going to have people out there that all just love you. You're going to have people out there that don't like you. I'm sure over the years, she's received different types of threats and people have been upset about what they've talked about on TV. So when, you know, as nice of a video and touching it as it is, it is a kind of an operational security issue of putting that stuff out there, where now the people that don't like you have the ability to go and see, hey, this is my mom. You're putting her picture and information out about her. It's not going to be hard for somebody to get online and start just digging around to figure out, you know, how can they find her?
Yeah. From Liz Wagoner, and then we'll have time for one more question for Nick before he's got to jump. But back to Cloyd, I asked you about this a little bit earlier, but I'd probably ask better here from Liz. What do you speculate is the motive? Not money, not robbery, not vengeance. So what could it be, Cloyd?
You know, that's a $100,000 question. I don't know. I mean, maybe it is for money. Maybe it is for vengeance, but I don't know. You can't discount any of those things at this point. You know, another thing I'd like to point out is over the years, I've actually had cases where people stalked local news anchors and they showed up at their houses and stuff. And there are wackos out like that. Mm-hmm. So that's another consideration that you're right. They might just have stalked her for whatever reason.
Yeah, I knew a guy back in the day, as way before I was in broadcast news, who used to write. He was an odd character, but not harmful. But he used to write the local anchor in New York, New Jersey every day. Like, he would write her. This is back before email. He was writing her letters, COE. I'll tell you that story because he used to work for a friend of mine. So there are people out there who get hooked on that, and she's in the public eye. So I think that has to be, you know, something that you're thinking about. Nick, I want to be mindful of your time. So bring us inside baseball here. A night like last night, you know, a big part of what you guys do involves adrenaline and lead up. And, you know, you guys are, quote unquote, the stars of the show, to use that metaphor, continuing on to go and get the bad guys. And then you go in last night, Pima does, and they come out empty handed. What is the morale like after a situation like that internally?
Well, it really depends on what the entire purpose of, you know, say what last night was for. There's a good chance that those SWAT officers that were serving the warrants last night knew what the purpose of it was. And so they may not have had the, you know, intentions of like, okay, we're going in to make the arrest of the suspect for this. They may have known, hey, we're doing this to secure the residence, make sure it's safe for investigators. And so they, at that point, they know they did their job. You know, there's a lot of hurry up and wait in the tactical world where, you know, it's, hey, get the team ready, and then we're going to go out and do this. And then they stand us down. Something else comes up in the case. They, you know, prosecutors decide, hey, we need to wait to get a little bit more before we actually make the apprehension or the arrest. So, you know, when those things happen, there's always going to be frustration. It's human nature. The team wants to go solve the crimes and get people in custody for committing terrible things. And so there's always going to be that human emotion to this. But most of the time, because we're so used to it, it's just you know, one of those things that we deal with on a regular basis.
This is something that no one's talked about, but it's the largest gem and mineral show, I think, in the world. It's in Tucson. It goes on, I think, all through February. And the person here says it attracts a criminal element, people looking for money and people in from around the world. Yeah, it's been going on there for years and years and years and years. But Nick, I just want to thank you for your service. This is a guy who literally puts his life on the line. So I hope you can go out and enjoy a nice Valentine's dinner tonight. But just your final thoughts here. I mean, do you think that this case gets cracked sooner than later? And just your final thoughts on this.
You know, I have no doubt with all the amount of law enforcement resources that have been dedicated to this investigation and with the media coverage, that at some point we will get a resolution to this. It's just, you know, it's not like TV where in 45 minutes, you know, you can solve, you know, a homicide or a kidnapping. It takes time. You know, evidence takes time to process. Digital evidence takes lots of time to process, and things are constantly coming in. So, you know, at some point, Pinal County or Pima County and the FBI will have what they need, and everything will kind of fall into place. So I'm confident that they will get whoever committed this crime. It's just a matter of how quickly everything falls into place for them.
If you're up to no good and you're thinking of burglarizing a home in Arizona tonight, you probably want to stay away from Nick's house. It's the brick house on the left down the street. Probably won't end well for you. But Nick, thanks a lot, man. I hope you'll come back on. Appreciate the insight.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Have a great night, man. Cloyd, just me and you, STS, you've got a homicide detective with 22 years experience, 34, I believe, on the force.
36.
Yeah, I don't want to shave off 2 years. And you look like the dude from Breaking Bad. You get that?
Oh, yeah, I do. Yeah. I'd like to point out, early in my career, I was a SWAT dog as well.
Oh,
and
really?
Yeah, I was. But I use SWAT teams all the time. They're a great asset.
Yeah, they're awesome. And thank you for your service, obviously. Grammy Sunshine here. We'll keep it cool and casual now. If you have a question for Cloyd, triple C's, and I'll try to get to some information I didn't get to. But in your opinion, I know you're not a profiler, but you are really because of being an investigator. But what is the profile of the person who would be willing to turn in the person or people who did this? That's a really interesting question.
Well, if they're doing it for the money, they're just lowlifes that want the money, and they'll turn the dime on anybody. You know, a person who has real information and really has concern for the case will just call it in. You know, they're not going to, if they think, you know, this might be the guy, or that guy looks a lot like this guy. That's a completely different animal than a guy that's saying, put a Bitcoin in this place and I'll tell you this. You know, that's kind of he's kind of a lowlife who will just do anything for money.
COE, do you happen to have that? If you don't worry about it. But if you happen to have that Dr. G fight, I thought that was really interesting. I'd love to play it for Cloyd in the last couple of minutes. But Cloyd, you were talking earlier, and I think this is also an important point about the case going cold. And you're like, no, because the advancement, I mean, digital forensics is crazy. And for example, last night, one of the things that they were at least looking at, but apparently what didn't turn into much, was a Range Rover, you know, a fairly new Range Rover. Between Teslas, Range Rovers, and these modern cars, what kind of wealth of information can they be from a digital forensic standpoint?
Well, I know Teslas actually keep a record of where you've been. I don't know for sure about Range Rovers, but they probably do. And, you know, they have a digital data bank of everything. You know, the Teslas have cameras all around, record all the time, and so yeah, those are huge. If you know, if that was the case, it'd be if they were there in the area, you'd be able to find that out.
Your friend Jim Fuda here, I've known Clyde for over 30 years. He's old, says Jim Fuda on the I'll tell you what, man, Jim Fuda looks fantastic. I think that guy should be a longevity.
He's actually a AI. He's not a real person.
He's not a real. Here's a super sticker from Jersey Girl, my home state. There was another question there, COE, but let me run by. There's a guy named Dr. G Explains on YouTube who is a friend of mine. And we actually have a video up right now after the show, if you guys want to check it out under the video tab. He's a world-renowned body language and behavior expert, but he's also a working psychologist. And he said, look, it's either going to be someone close to the family, completely random, or someone in between, which, you know, covers all the bases. But his theory is that because of her medical condition, that she was going to a ton of doctors and a ton of nurses and came across a ton of people in the medical field. And if someone recognizes that Nest Cam footage and it's someone from the medical field, they're going to say to themselves, oh, can't be this person. They're a doctor. They're a nurse. They're a home health care taker. They would never do this. And so he thinks it's someone from the medical field, which is so specific. And he's not a profiler, but I thought it was really interesting because I would think the same thing if I was in a medical office and I saw a nurse or a caretaker type and they looked really familiar. And I'm like thinking this guy is that guy from the Nest Cam footage. I'm also thinking this guy works in a doctor's office. He takes care of old women. There's no way he's doing this. Right. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, you cannot have that. I mean, you think it's unlikely, but it's really not. You know, you'd be surprised how many people are depraved and seemingly upright professions, but they exist. And so I don't know if that's true or not about this guy, but you're right that most people would think, oh, it can't possibly be him, but it could.
Mm. And Cloyd, take us inside Pima County and the feds right now. I assume the FBI and them have a command post set up or something in the office, but people really don't understand this part of it. What are they doing tonight? I mean, this is going on, or let me ask, I assume this is going on 24 hours a day right now, nonstop. But like on a night like tonight, where we don't see anything happening on TV, how many dedicated homicide detectives are there? How many dedicated federal agents are there? How are they working together? And how, I mean, these are lots of questions, and how are they sharing the information? If you can just spend a few minutes to explain all this.
Well, I don't know how many dedicated homicide detectives Pima County has in the first place, but all detectives that are qualified for that, almost all of them are working this case along with.
By the way, we asked that question the other night and it's an extremely low number. I was shocked. I think it's six full time and only four because Phil Ramos, who's retired homicide Vegas, he asked that question. They had 30 at any given time. Only four here. So walk us through give us the inside baseball on here.
Well, I mean, they're going to have other detectives that are violent crime detectives that don't necessarily specifically do homicide involved also. And then the FBI will have people, they probably all sit in one office and they're talking to each other. I'm talking worker bee level, not administrator level. They're talking to each other constantly, going over tips, probably having meetings, too many meetings, about, you know, where are we at now, what should we do next, and those type of things. They're going through those tips, and they're spitballing. And, you know, a lot of times these cases are solved by seat of your pants work, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's a good way to go. I saw a question up there earlier about, that was on there, you didn't ask, but how do you have a theory and how do you keep an open mind? Well, that's one of my pet peeves, first of all. You can have a working theory from the beginning, but when the evidence takes you away from that, you go where the evidence says. The worst detectives in the world decide what the answer is at the beginning, and they only look for those clues that support their thesis, and you can't be that way. You have to go, okay, this is what I think happened. And as you're going, you find out that didn't happen. You have to take a left and a right or go all the way back to the beginning and start over again. That happens in almost every whodunit homicide. So there's nothing wrong. But you do have working theories so that you know, based on your experience, so you run those leads down first. But you got to go where the evidence takes you. And if the evidence takes you a completely different way, you got to go that way.
Yeah. Now, back to last night, three detainees from what we're told. Also, at one point, they said it was a mother and a son. Obviously, a lot of the details are, you know, sketchy at best. We understand that the detainee who was in that Range Rover was released. I never heard if the other two detainees were released, but talk to us about a detainee in general. Like, what once they got these people through SWAT or a traffic stop last night, what are they asking them? And generally, how long are they holding them? And how are they knowing whether or not to release them?
Well, the last part is easy. You either have probable cause or you don't, right? And they're I mean, I've picked people up for questioning and released them, but I always do something like I take DNA from them or something, thinking that when I get that back, I'll know whether that was them or not. Sometimes I get back it wasn't them, but sometimes I do, and then I go get them for real. It's not uncommon, but I think nobody was kept, because I heard this morning that there's nobody in custody, so all three were released. And you know, I don't know why they picked them up, whether it was digital from their phones or whether it was something else. I'm sure they took DNA samples from all of them, and they're waiting for that, which, by the way, shouldn't take that long in this situation. In a routine situation, it can take a long time, but this is not a routine situation. So you they're waiting for that, or they're waiting for other corroborators. These people had a reasonable explanation of why they're in that area. Like the first guy they had, he's an Amazon driver. Well, I deliver in that area, you know? Yeah, of course you pick my phone up in that area. I'm sure they did a phone dump on the tower closest to her house, especially because it was late at night. You're going to have less numbers as opposed to the middle of the day. You might have 10,000 numbers that were in that cell towers area. But late at night, you might only have a few hundred. And they probably were going through that one at a time and figure out who these people are and why they were there, and trying to find out why. And that's one of the things they're doing. Or electronic thing, you know, they can tell so much stuff. And, you know, I'm just speculating, you know, I don't have any information. But
let me run something else by you. So I was talking to a friend of mine who's retired NYPD detective, and he said he wouldn't be surprised, like the Range Rover, if they ran some sort of dump on like the Waze app, you know, like these driving directions apps. Is that something you would do to see?
Sure.
I guess. Explain how that would even work? It seems like there is so much.
Well, each of them has each vehicle or phone has an individual signature. And mm-hmm. So if they're accessing these apps, it's going to say that phone, you know, it traveled this area at around that time. And so there's going to be more than one. Now you're going to swoop down and get it. It may or may not be the right one. And there's people can have a reasonable reason. Well, I live, my brother lives right down the street or whatever, you know, and you check that out. Yeah, that's true.
But you can go to Waze and say, give me all your vehicles that were at this location at this time on this day. Can you go to Google Maps? Will they give you that? Will Google give you that?
You have to have a search warrant. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they'll give it to you if you have a search warrant.
I thought that was really interesting. Another thing that came up, this person is covered head to toe. COE, if we could just bring back, I mean, this is the guy we're talking about. This is it right here. But this is our guy. But so there's a woman, Lois, I forget her last name, Houston. She works in Houston. She's been a sketch artist for the PD for 43 years. She decided to take a quote unquote stab at it and drew a sketch of this guy, right? But people in the business are like, how the hell can you draw a sketch? You have no cheekbones. You have no eyebrows. You have no.
Right.
And it's obviously, you know, very distinct looking person. But someone, Rachel, just here is asking, when is it too soon to put up a picture or a composite? Isn't that how they found Luigi Mangione? But how do you put a sketch together?
Yeah. You have to have a witness who helps you with a sketch. You know, I saw one today and I don't remember. It was somebody speculating the same thing. Without the mask on, it's probably, and you know, maybe it'll be accurate. I don't know. You know, they can also, with DNA, they can turn that into a sketch. They, you know, take the DNA and there's a process where you get an image of what the guy probably looks like. Percentages wise, it's not 100% accurate, of course. And I used to think, I thought, now this is snake oil. This is BS, right? But I went to a seminar one time where these people showed samples where they just had random people send in DNA. They developed these images without ever seeing them, and then saw the people, and it was amazingly accurate. So, you know, that's something they could do too. There's places that do that.
Yeah. And then I was reading today about it. I forget the terminology. It's a sort of DNA sequencing where they can come up with eye color, hair color,
right. skin That's color. Exactly right. Offram is one of the companies that does that.
Because they said that, you know, they found some foreign DNA now. Is that something that they're going to do, send it to a lab? Well,
you would hope, right. And then you would hope they do genealogy too, which genealogy takes time because you literally have, you know, unless that person himself is in the database, which is not likely. First of all, you have to have a close relative. They score it, and it has to be a certain number before they'll use that person. And then they have to trace the records, birth records, death records, ancestry, and that takes time. That takes a lot of, that's the real murder she wrote, some little old lady looking at genealogy, and she solves the case. That's real.
Yeah, our friend Jared Ross, DNA phenotyping, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Phenotyping, yeah.
Yeah, phenotyping, thanks to Jared. Another question or two for you. So Mike Ruiz is a friend of mine. He's a Fox News digital reporter on the ground. He's fantastic if you want to follow someone. This I should have brought up much earlier in the show, so apologies. But he broke this a little bit before we went on air. And he wrote, and I this direct quote from his tweet here. I am told by a high-level source that after last night's activity, Cloyd, the FBI is still waiting for the sheriff's lab results, I guess either on the car or whatever they may have swabbed last night. But there's this obviously this ongoing peeing match going on between the feds and the Pima County Sheriff, which the Pima County Sheriff is downplaying. But apparently the FBI was waiting as recently as the beginning of the show to get the material they needed to send in to get it tested from whatever they got last night. How problematic is that if these guys are fighting between each other?
Well, if they are, I mean, I have heard a lot of people slamming private labs. Some of these private labs are the best around. You know, they're not, and this thing, well, they don't have access to CODIS. Yes, a lot of private labs do have access to CODIS. So, I mean, I presume this one does. And, you know, I don't know. It depends on what did they have? What samples do they have? I don't know. I just be speculating. But, I mean, you're going to have a little bit of this, but people have opinions about what's best and what's not best. It's not necessarily accurate.
Yeah. Steve Cohen, if you're still listening, it is Parabon Nanolabs that do this. And I'd love to get someone on from Parabon Nanolabs, COE. Yeah. Please remind me.
They were the ones that gave the presentation that I watched.
Yeah. Huge thanks here. Cloyd Steiger, 36 years within the Seattle Police Department, 22 of those on homicide. Another wealth of information. We don't just say we've got the best guest in true crime. We have the best guest in true crime. You know how we know we have the best guest in true crime? Because everyone steals our guests from us because we are the best at what we do. We do this Monday through Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Fridays, my mom comes in. 1 o'clock on your way out, please hit that like and subscribe button. We've got an active Patreon page. I'll leave it wide open for you, Cloyd. Number one, thank you for coming on. I hope you'll come back very soon. Where do we go from here and how does this all end and when?
Well, it's going to end sooner than later. They're going to make the right arrest. They'll get the right lab result back and you'll hear it. But, you know, there's all these what everybody thinks is false starts. They're really not false starts. They're just part of the investigative process. And it's frustrating to people, but that's the way the real world works.
And this final super chat question. Were tracking dogs or cadaver dogs used to see? I know they brought cadaver dogs in. Just in general, how useful, thank you to Mouse for the super sticker, but how useful, I love dogs more than people, no offense to all the people watching, but how useful are these dogs?
Well, they're useful. I would hope that they used, well, the Border Patrol is the one that would be the one with the dogs. It's not cadaver dogs necessarily, but bloodhounds to search the desert area around the house. You know, it looks like they did that eventually, not right away. Cadaver dogs are okay, but you have to have an idea where the cadaver is. You can't just, I mean, if you think, well, I have information that's in this field, great. Send a cadaver dog into that field. But just without more information, then you can't.
Mm. And then again, another final question. If you look at that video, the Nest Cam, this guy's got a backpack filled to the hilt. And we've had homicide detectives take guesses at what is going on in there. If you had to take a guess, what do you think was jam-packed into that backpack?
Well, if this was an intended abduction, I would think it would be something restraining tools of some sort, duct tape, rope, those type of things.
And then I lied again because we're getting a super chat from Justin. This will be the final question. I can't abuse Cloyd on his first time here, but I think you were on once before, Cloyd. But if Nancy was killed, do you believe she was killed at the house or taken off site? And your final thoughts?
Well, she was still alive when she went through that punch front porch because she was still bleeding. So probably away from the house. And it may not be that she was intentionally killed. She may have just died, you know, from whatever. But she was still bleeding going out the house, and dead bodies don't bleed. So she probably was alive at that point.
Wow. Huge thanks again. 22 years in a homicide with Seattle PD, 36 on the force. Are either of your sons, I don't know if you have more than two, are they in law enforcement?
I have three, and two of them were in Seattle, but now I have one in Seattle. One of the ones that lives in Arizona used to be a Seattle police officer, but he left.
Nice. Well, tell them thanks for their service. Thank you for your service, and we'll call on you again probably much sooner than you'd like, and love to have you on the show and hope you will come back.
Of course. No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Love you, America. Love you, Seattle, Washington State, Tucson, Arizona. Super Bowl champs. That's right. And let's bring Nancy home and go Seahawks, baby.